Evening, everyone. I'm Michelle. I'm a compulsive gambler, and my last bet was the 1st of May 2022. Yeah, it's really lovely to be asked to speak on this evening's meeting. And it's quite a while. It's a while since I've done the chair now at a meeting, so I'm always a little bit, God, I can't. It's hard to believe that I'm sitting here and sharing about my experience, strength, and hope tonight. I mean, I attend GA very regularly, and it's always such an honor, because you see me sitting here tonight, like when I look back to the 1st of May 2022 when I had my last bet, and I wanted to actually end my life that day. So, I'm very, very grateful to still be alive and still be here enjoying life today, thanks to the GA program. I suppose a little bit about my story, like just looking back on my life, I suppose I had a relatively normal childhood and upbringing. I have 5 other siblings, and I come from Ireland, and a little place up north of Ireland, about 5 hours from where I live now. And my mum and dad were really young when they married and had me. I think my mum was 17, and they were very hard working. My father was a farmer, and myself and my siblings had a wonderful childhood early on. I suppose the first kind of real change in my life was I lost my grandmother at the age when I was just turned 5, or just before I turned 5, and she was a massive void out of my life. She was 48 when she died. She fell down the stairs, and my father is the oldest in his family, and his father was an alcoholic, and he was left with the decision to turn off her life support, which was, I can imagine how difficult that was. She had all brain injuries and stuff. And I remember just being, my nana was my rock. Like, I was the first grandchild on both sides. And yeah, when she was gone out of my life, I didn't really know what happened, but I knew she was gone, and it was a massive void in my life. And as life went on, and I lost grandparents and stuff, and my mum, I just remember a change a bit in my life when my mum was in her early 30s, and she lost her father. He was very young as well, 60, I think, and he had a massive heart attack. And I remember my mum turned a lot to drinking at that stage when she lost her father, and she'd lie in bed for days drinking. I have this very vivid image of her. I could just hear her roaring, crying all the time. But apart from that, like, I could see her drinking escalating a bit, but we still were well looked after and cared for. And I had my teenage years, and I went to school, and I went to secondary school or high school, and had happy memories of all of that. And just before I turned 20, my mother's drinking got excessively worse. And I remember I used to lock my bedroom door at night, because I could hear her rowing with my father downstairs, and I'd always be worried that she'd come upstairs to me, and she'd often be very, abusive with drinking her. And one particular night, I was kind of woken in my sleep with hammering at the door, and I eventually let her in. I knew she'd been drinking, and she just shouted like at me, saying, "Your father isn't your father." And I had just turned 20, and I was thinking, what the actual hell? Like, I had no idea my whole life, and then I'm just like, suddenly something just slapped me in the face, and I remember just being really traumatized after that, thinking, oh my God. Like, and I remember she got in the car that night drunk, and she didn't come back for days. But I remember going downstairs crying to my father, saying, "Is this true?" And he was like, "It's not true." And it was just really difficult, and she was trying to actually tell me that, her and my dad and a few others that hung about together, she was trying to tell me it was actually my sister's boyfriend's father that could be my father. And my sister was actually engaged to this fellow, like, and then my sister was screaming at me, like, "You need to get paternity tests." And I had much time to kind of digest what was after happening, but all I know at that point was that I wanted to leave home. I did not want to be there anymore. I just felt like I didn't belong, and I felt like my whole life was a lie, So I started like researching jobs, and just, I worked in the travel industry, and I was like, just wanted to get away from my mum especially. And yeah, I started researching jobs somewhere near Dublin, and I actually got a job before I left home. And I remember packing up my belongings, and the day that I left home, which might have been like a month or two later after all this happened, My mum wasn't actually there to say goodbye, you know, and I just left and was so happy to be leaving. I suppose just like running away. And that's the only way I knew how to cope at that time. But I remember moving to this new place, like 4 hours from home. You know, I was out on my own and I was just happy, you know. And I love my job in the travel industry. And, you know, I'd continue to work in that industry for a long, long time. And I suppose after, you know, I made the move, maybe after a year or two, I actually got into a relationship with someone, and this person was a couple, like 4 years younger than me. And you know, very early on in that relationship, you know, I was like, I remember going out with this person and they introduced me to their friends one night. And I remember going home from, say, you know, the area that we were in. And I remember him hitting me on the way home, saying, you know, you looked at this person the wrong way, or you looked at my friend the wrong way. And you were, you know, it was just, and I remember feeling so upset, like, because I'd never been hit before, like, and I thought, oh my God, like, but I, you know, he would say to me, look, I'm sorry, like, I got it wrong, this won't happen again. And, you know, basically, you know, this went on for 7.5 years, kind of, where it was just, I had to ask permission to go to the shop if my mum and dad came to visit. Like, it was just, you know, jealousy and control. And, you know, many nights of being thumped and fists through walls. And, you know, I remember going to visit my then partner's family at the time, and I was late home from work one day, and he was so angry because I was delayed at work. I was so angry that we had to leave that bit later to go and see his family. And I remember driving on a highway or a motorway, and he actually drove at a speed trying to kill us, like, to teach me a lesson, like. So it went from bad to worse very early on in that relationship, but I felt like I could not leave. I could not get out, and I had no one to turn to, you know. You know, my family could see signs when they came to visit, like, and I just, you know, I didn't want them to hate that person, and I just kept saying everything's fine. And eventually, you know, my brother moved away from home, my youngest brother, and, you know, there's 7 years between us, but he could see also that I was kind of unhappy. And you know, I ended up actually going to see my brother one weekend, and this is after 7.5 years, you know, and I decided that I wasn't going to go back, like, and I actually ended up running away to a place, like, in another county or town or whatever. And I remember staying in like an Airbnb or a B&B or whatever for like a week to try and, you know, I'd gone in and out of work at that time. But I actually, it was my only chance of getting away from that person. And I remember like having 25 missed calls, like, when are you coming back? Like, where, you know, what time will you be home from seeing your brother? And I was like, it was the first time I picked up the phone and I said, I'm not coming back. So I was really glad just to break, you know, it wasn't actually a clean break free of that relationship, but I actually did not go back. And I remember after that time in my life, you know, it was like out of the frying pan into the fire. And, you know, it was like searching for love or searching to be loved and just never ever finding that, you know. And I remember when I broke free of that relationship, it was a time where I kind of started, I turned to gambling. And you know, I was probably, you know, in my mid to late 20s at this stage. And you know, when I come home from work in the evenings, I'd actually go to, you know, a gambling establishment or whatever and punch in a bit of time. So yeah, I continued that, and at, you know, I at that stage I was just using my wages or whatever, and you know, that was fine. And this went on for, it was the only time I felt like no one could touch me or I could escape the world that I just came from, you know, and I felt safe and I felt like nobody knew me. But obviously, you know, as the years went on, I was turning up more and more to betting establishments. I was gambling all my money, all my wages. I had no money to pay rent, and I had no children at this stage. And I think maybe I was, you know, I was very worried about relationships or ever getting into a relationship again. But I did actually happen to meet a nice person. I think it was about 2.5 or 3 years before I kind of let anyone into my life again. And I was still gambling all the time, weekends after work. And, you know, but at that stage, I thought, oh, I am in control. You know, I'm just losing my wages. It's no big deal. Like, and, you know, ringing my mum or my brother and saying, you know, I need money for rent. I'm after paying another bill, or, you know, lying to them to get money to pay bills then. And then when I met my now current partner, we're together like almost 15 years. You know, I had my first child. He's 13 and a half now. I suppose for a good period of his life, I was gambling as well. Like I remember, you know, we had Adam quite early, and we were together a year and a half, maybe, when I had my firstborn. And I remember driving to like betting shops with him in the back of the car and leaving him outside in the car just so I could go in and gamble, you know. And he was roaring, crying. I'd go out and check on him every 20 minutes or to make sure like that he was still sleeping or wasn't roaring. And if he woke, then I would feel guilty and I'd have to drive home, you know. But it just spiraled out of control, my gambling. I had really good jobs in the travel industry, and I suppose when I met my now current partner, we actually moved again, you know, to be near family for support. And yeah, I had gotten a few jobs within travel as well, but I'd actually stolen from those people. I'd actually, you know, I'd actually taken money for holidays and I'd cancel receipts and I'd take the cash and I'd go and gamble it, you know. And I won't mention amounts, but there was once or twice too where, you know, my now current partner had to ring my brother and say Michelle's in a lot of trouble from gambling, like, you know, she could go to prison. And you know, he had to bail me out, like. And yeah, so I burnt down relationships with my youngest brother, who I was very, very close to. He was, you know, and I promised him I'd stop. And you know, I remember in 2020 when my little girl was born, you know, I'd gotten another great job and I'd stole from them as well. And you know, nobody knew that I was back doing, and it was as bad as ever, you know. And this is my third or fourth relapse, you know, over a space of 11 years. And I still thought I was in control, you know. And that it was at that point in 2020 when I went in to have my youngest daughter, and I was in hospital knowing that I'd stolen from my then employer, thinking, how am I going to even deliver this child? How am I going to even get the baby here safe? Like, I was so stressed and so worried. And eventually that employer did find out as well that I'd stolen from them. And you know, I worked from home at the time, and I remember them coming, taking my laptops, and I had to email her everything, every person that I'd taken money from, to gamble. And then it was at that point that I lost my brother for about 2 years, I'll say. A year and a half, maybe. And I remember after a year and a half, he came to visit me and asked me, was I still gambling? And I said no. And I actually was. I'd lied to him, you know. Even after 2020, after the huge amount of hurt I caused him and my family, I still lied again, you know. And halfway through 2021, don't ask me, you know, how I did care for the children, but I was never fully present, you know. And then it was finally, you know, I went back working from home for myself, not for a company. It was around, you know, the beginning of 2022. And one friend in particular had made a booking with me, and I told her the holiday was booked, and you know, I'd gambled the money, and there was three other friends of hers traveling with her, and it was for her 40th birthday. And it was for only for a couple of days, but I had gambled the money. And I remember a day or two before they were due to fly out, which was around this, you know, it was the 1st of May, and they were due to fly on the 2nd of May. I remember all of that day on the 1st of May, 2022. My partner wasn't here. He was doing a driving job, and I was at home with three kids. And my youngest was like a year and a half at the time, or just coming on two. I remembered, like, even, you know, going on Instagram, going on Facebook, like, you know, messaging like Arabs in Dubai, like just the desperation to try and get money to get this holiday booked for the following day, like complete insane stuff. To the point where I ended up ringing my partner's sister saying, you know, can I borrow a credit card? Like, these are due to leave in 6 hours. And I was in hysterics in the house crying, you know. And at that point, she said to me, you know, where is your partner? Like, and I said, he's driving. And she said, look, I'm not giving you the money. You need to ring your friend and tell her what you've done. And I was like, oh my God. So at that point, I tried to leave the house and leave the kids on their own and just drive somewhere to kill myself, you know. But she actually came, and she stopped me, and my partner came home and she rang him, and I ended up like having to ring my friend and tell her that there was no holiday, that I'd sent her fake tickets. And it was just the most, I think it was just the worst rock bottom that I ever hit, you know. And you know, I had her friends ringing me saying they were going to call the police or the guards or whatever, I was going to go to prison. And it just really hit me then, you know, that the damage that I had caused, like, and this was over an 11-year period. And I remember my partner coming home, and he just, it was the first time he didn't shout at me, you know, he wasn't angry. He just said, "Michelle, you need help." Like, and it was at that point, you know, that he said, you know, we looked into getting to rehab. And thank God, I think within 2 weeks of that final last gamble on the 1st of May to try and get money to book that holiday, I actually got into rehab here in Ireland. And honestly, you know, I had to pack up and leave three young kids, like age 10, 4 and 1.5, to drive off somewhere that I didn't even know existed. And yeah, try and just like get help. Like, you know, I honestly, there was so many times I wanted time just to stop. I wanted the clock to stop ticking. I just wanted everything to end. I wanted the pain and the suffering and the guilt and the shame and everything that comes with what I'd done. I just did not want to live another day, you know. But I'm so glad that somehow, by a miraculous miracle, that I actually got into rehab here in Ireland. And it just really changed my life, you know. It was the toughest journey of my life to date after that 1st of May relapse. And you know, I went in there and there was like only 12 people in there. And you know, you get to, you know, have group therapy, and you get to be with like-minded people and people that are going through similar to what I was going through. And it just really gave me some comfort to know that I wasn't alone in the world anymore, and that I could actually open my mouth and speak for the first time in probably a 12-year period. And yeah, it was just such a humbling experience. And you know, my kids came and see me on the family days, and it's very hard letting them go again, but they knew that mum was going to do this to try and get well, you know. And thank God I did. And when I came out of rehab after 28 days, you know, I had a 2 year continuum of care program that I attended once a week for 2 hours for 2 years. And then I got my little, you know, recovery medallion from rehab, and I just hit 39 months in recovery, thank God, on the 1st of August. And I'm just really grateful to be here to tell my story today, and maybe, you know, just give others hope, you know, because my life was just completely unmanageable, you know, and it was just, I did not know how to cope with anything. And unfortunately, you know, thank God today, my relationships with my family and that are much better, and I have them all back in my life. And, you know, with the help of my partner, you know, we've paid off a lot of the debt. We actually had a little baby in 2023, our little recovery baby. He just turned 2 yesterday. And we just came back from a family holiday in Italy. You know, we went there last week, and it was our first family holiday in 6.5 years. So when I think back on my journey this far, to think that what we've achieved together in 39 short months, you know, one day at a time, I'm just so grateful for the life that I have today. Like I wanted like everything. I wanted a big house like my sisters. I wanted a wedding. I wanted a big fancy car. Like today, I know that nothing matters, only what I have around me and what I have, a roof over my head. I have food to put on the table, and I have four beautiful children and a partner that stuck by me through it all, which, and my family, you know. It's just been probably the best journey of my life so far, and I'm so glad somehow a higher power was looking down on me and gave me the strength to get to where I am now. And I do not take anything for granted, you know. And I think, you know, giving a little bit of service when I can within GA, doing a chair, you know, attending GA meetings, it's just, it's made me the person that I am today. And yeah, I'm just really grateful to still be a mum and be here for my kids and put a smile on my face. And the smile on my face you see today is actually a real smile. It's not like there's something hidden behind my face, you know. And I remember my counselor in rehab saying, the poker face with gambling. And nobody ever knew around me that I was doing what I was doing or suffering inside. And that's the way it was for me in the end. And people were shocked and saddened, and in the end, for me, it went from going to establishments to all online because I didn't want to be seen in the outside world. But thank God the 1st of May 2022 was the day I placed my last bet. Thank God. And I will keep coming back to GA because it saved my life, and getting a good sponsor really helped. It took me a while to find someone, but I think it was around 6 months in recovery. I found a really great sponsor as well. So very, very grateful for all those things that have brought me to now. And I hope I didn't overshare or go on too long. But yeah, that's me, Michelle, compulsive gambler, grateful compulsive gambler in recovery. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks so much for your share there, Michelle. Really grateful to have you as part of the speaker meeting this evening. And great to see so many familiar faces on the meeting tonight. And if you did come in late, you're not missing anything because it'll probably be available to listen to in the next 36 hours. So, thank you so much, Michelle. And we'll go to questions now. I'm not seeing any hands up at the moment. It's a lot of people and no hands. We got Brian. Brian wants to ask a question. Fire away, Brian.
Hi, Michelle. Nice to see you, love. I haven't seen you for a long time, even though I haven't been to your meetings. But yeah, I remember you. And well done, love, for doing, getting to where you are today. And so, what question I really asked, and what do you do on a daily basis now, to keep you away from a bet? What do you do from waking up, basically?
Sorry, Brian, I couldn't get unmuted there. Yeah, so I suppose like the first thing I do when I wake up is first of all just say a little prayer and say please, help me to get through this day. And generally I have a routine where I wake up and I attend the Dublin Daily meeting. So I try and get that first meeting in the morning, which is 7:45. I try and do that at least like 3 to 4 times a week. I suppose, it's really hard, being a mum of four and the youngest just turned two, Brian, and the oldest is 13 and a half, and I have them going back to school like between this week and next week. But I think for me, it's always about meetings. It's about reading the GA literature. It's about reading the 12-step literature. It's about, reaching out to my sponsor if I'm having a bad day or anyone within the GA program. Like I just keep those things the forefront of my mind. But then I find like that first meeting of the day really sets me up for the day and really puts me in a positive mindset.
Thank you.
You're
All the best
welcome,
for one day at a time.
Brian. Thanks for that question, Brian. And we'll go to Denise now.
Hello, Michelle. How are you? Yeah, I have been on both sides of that issue. Yeah, my mom, she died, and I never got a chance to tell her that I loved her. I never got a chance to tell her that I forgave her. I write it out sometimes, and then I just burn the paper. But I would really have loved to have hugged her and to tell her that I understood. Tell my dad the same thing, but I never got that opportunity. But what I come to understand now is this is the place to say those things. This is the place to say them out loud. My question is, have you ever really just sat down and written a letter about everything that you went through and process what you went through, and how did you go about doing that? Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Denise. It's lovely to see you. Yeah, so I think for the first time in my life, Denise, was when I went to rehab, and in there, you're working through the 12 steps. I got to do step one, admitting I was powerless, and then you can like my counselor in rehab kind of veered off a little bit from the step, and we were doing a bit about codependency and stuff. So I actually got to write a lot in rehab, Denise, about my life experience and about my mum and about different things, And when it came to the end of my journey in rehab, Denise, there's like a little fire pit, where you've done so much writing over the 28 days and about, your life story. And yeah, and then you get to burn it before you leave, Denise. And that was probably the first time in my life that I felt a weight lifted. It was the first weight lifted off my shoulders, like, or off my brain or out of my head, to have see all that in black and white, and then to see it burnt up in smoke. And it also kind of it gave me a chance to heal, and also to forgive myself, and also to be able to forgive others as well, Denise. So that really, really helped me in early recovery. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. And that is why they have us right in this program.
Thanks for that question, Denise. That was a brilliant question. And we'll go to Spring next.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for your chair. I just wanted, it's not really a question, I just wanted to say thank you. Listening to you has given me so much more hope. As I'm new to this and only 8 days, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Spring, thank you so much. And I just want to say to you, never give up on yourself. You deserve this life, and I can see that today, but I couldn't see things clearly in those days before and those early days in recovery. But I'm always here as well, as a person that you can reach out to. I find it really hard and early recovery to find other females that were going through similar, especially in Ireland, I found it was a lot more male kind of orientated. And I have met females since, but yeah, I was always afraid because I was the only female at a physical meeting, or I was always scared about that, but not now. But yeah, I just want to say well done in your 8 days, and yeah, stay strong, Spring, and attend as many GA meetings as you can.
Thank you.
Thanks for that, Spring. We're grateful to have you on the meeting today, and please keep coming back. And we'll go to Johnny next.
Good evening, everyone. Johnny here, compulsive gambler. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much, Adam, for your service and for the co-hosts. Making this meeting happen here tonight, and also for Michelle for sharing her story. Unfortunately, I didn't hear it all, Michelle. I apologize, but I do look forward to listening back to it. But I suppose I just want to say thanks, first of all, for everything that I've learned off you over this period of a few years now. Seeing how many meetings and by you sharing your experience, strength, and hope, your honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are affectionate. And I've really learned a lot from you. You've helped me an awful lot on my journey, so I'd like to say thanks, first of all. Secondly, I had two questions. I suppose I'm a bit of a greedy person still, is one of my character defects. But the first question, you might have already touched on that in your story, but when did you finally, my first question was, when did you finally realise that you surrendered, that you really had enough? That would be my first question. I'm going to follow it up with then, what step was the hardest for you and why? Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny, and it's always been a pleasure seeing you on meetings as well, and I've learned a lot from yourself and all the wonderful members in GA, so thank you for that, Johnny. I suppose, Johnny, I over an 11-year period, that rock bottom for me, and that worst, what I would say was the worst day of my life, and when I surrendered was the 1st of May 2022, because the pain was, I know there's probably another rock bottom that I don't ever want to think about, but For me, that was the worst I've ever experienced on that particular day, Johnny, to the fact that I was ready to run out the door and leave my three kids and kill myself. Like, and I remember feeling a bit depressed a few times before that when I'd relapsed, but not to that extent, you know. And I think for me, I think step one was pretty hard, you know. I suppose because I did it in rehab, Johnny, and I did it, as a group of with 11 other people, and reading it out and answering all the questions as part of step one, I found that really brought me down way below earth level. Like, it really made me like just feel so small. Like, I find that really difficult because I was so used to Johnny not like wanting to go out to the outside world or talk to anyone or see people, to be in a room with 11 other people and stand up and say out loud, I am, powerless over gambling. My life has become unmanageable. Like, I find that so difficult. I hope that answers your question, Johnny.
Thank you perfectly. Thank you. God bless.
Thanks so much for those questions, Johnny. And we'll go to Darlene next.
Hi everyone, I'm Darlene and I'm a compulsive gambler. And it was really nice to see you when I logged on to the meeting, Michelle, and it was exceptionally grateful to hear your story, even though I've heard the tidbits. We've been on the journey together for some time and haven't seen you in a while. But I just, you're a real inspiration, true inspiration, and your message of hope and honesty. And I know you've helped me many, many times when I would log on to the Dublin Daily. I sleep through the night now. I'm not up in the middle of the night too often anymore, but that's why I'm not there. But I know all the service that you give to, that you give back to GA, and I want to thank you for that. And it's good to see you.
Thank you so much, Darlene. And it's great to see you, and it's great to see so many faces, and people coming back. And I think when I first found Zoom, and in particular Dublin Daily, which is my home group, like, I honestly kept wanting to come back. There was something so special and so accessible about having Zoom. It was very daunting in those early days with three children and now four children. And so to be in the comfort of my own home and be able to log on to a meeting at any hour of the day, I was just so grateful, Darlene, and so grateful to have met the wonderful people on this journey, and I just say it one day at a time. Like, it's still one day at a time, sometimes 1 hour at a time, Darlene. It depends how stressful my day is. But all I know now is that I can pick up the phone and ring a member or go into the WhatsApp group, and there's always someone there, and I don't feel afraid anymore. I don't feel afraid to reach out to people now. Like, I used to just want to hide away from the world. I actually want to go out into the world now and be myself, the person that I was always meant to be, Thank you so much, Darlene.
Thank you, Darlene. And we'll go to Alex next. Alex? Oh, Alex is gone. It says, anybody else who wants to ask Michelle a question or comment, please feel free to come off mute. And we've got George C now. Over to you, George. Hello, George.
Here we go. My name is okay, what am I doing? It's not a therapy. Hi. Thank you very much, George C. Compulsive Gambler. Michelle, do you ever get that feeling like, and I don't mean like you actually think you've got it under control, but do you ever suddenly get a feeling like maybe I don't need this anymore? or something along those lines, like you suddenly don't think you need it anymore? That's the question. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Good to see you. To be honest, George, no, I don't. I haven't ever got that feeling since I left rehab. I think that was actually work. Like that was the hardest thing that I've ever went through. GA was actually like a breath of fresh air when I came in here. When I went to rehab, they gave me the guidelines and the, I suppose, the tools to actually to help myself stay in recovery. And I never ever feel now, even 39 months on, I never ever feel that I don't need this because I know exactly that I would, that I cannot take my foot off the pedal, George, not for one moment. Because I suppose, George, for me, and I don't say this lightly, but I have my youngest brother that I'm very close with. Like he works in the industry that I used to bet on. My partner works in the racing industry as well, and I'm surrounded with this every day of my. I don't mean I surround myself with it, but my me and myself and my partner work live together, and he goes to work and he does his job, and I don't think about that what he does at work. Same with my brother; he's in Australia now, but I cannot take my foot off the pedal in GA. I have to keep showing up, and I do it first and foremost for myself, for my children, for my partner, and for my family, and for everyone that believed in me when I couldn't even believe in myself, George. And I do not say that lightly. Like GA, I hope there never ever comes a time where I don't think I don't need to be here because I actually love being here. I love this opportunity even tonight to come to a different meeting outside my comfort zone and to see new faces and be asked questions and be challenged and be able to answer what I feel, from the bottom of my heart and in all honesty, So no, I haven't had that feeling since I left rehab at all. Like there was plenty of years before that that I just was lying to myself, thinking I don't need this. I can do this on my own. I can't do this on my own, George. Thank you for your question.
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. We got Brian got his hand up again.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. Hi, Michelle again. Just on the steps, as we go through, and it's step 8 and 9, and you had three people there to make amends to about the money for the holiday. How did that actually turn out as such? How did you make the amends to them people, or did you? Have you seen them again, or how did it work? Because, well, just on mine, when I stole from work, I had to leave many years ago. Now I had to leave, and I've never seen one person from that job, from there again. So I kind of don't have a reminder. But are they in your village, or how did it all pan out? How did you repay it all? Take responsibility.
Thanks for your question, Brian. Yeah, so I suppose within the steps, I'm being willing to make amends, and yes, I was willing to make amends when I got that far, and then it's except when it would injure others. There was one or two cases where it would have, injured others, and I could not make amends, but I actually wrote down and asked for forgiveness on that occasion. Yes, I did go make direct amends to people that I had stolen money from. And I remember my counselor saying to me, Michelle, like I was saying how scared I was to do that when, when it would come to that part of the step work. And they said, Michelle, as long as you're willing, it's okay if the person isn't ready to forgive you. It's the fact that you've tried. And there has been times where they have not been willing to forgive. I have repaid the debt with the help of my partner to people that I stole from directly. So that for me was a little part of the making amends, but I also had to be accountable and say, I did do this. I was that person and I am truly sorry. But there has been times where people haven't been ready to forgive me, and I will try again.
Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
for that. Been some great questions tonight. It's been a fantastic meeting. And Alex. Can't hear you, Alex.
Hi there, I'm Alex D, a compulsive gambler. Sorry, I'm a little bit issue with my internet. I have desire not to gamble today. I want to thank you, Michelle, so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, where you've been, where you are now. I've never met you, and you are telling a lot of my story. And I love this international daily meeting. To see and hear people and know that we have connections all around the world. For me, I had a very tumultuous relationship with my mom growing up too. And when I was 12, I too found out that the dad that I thought was my dad wasn't, and found out there was this whole other person that I didn't even know about. And what happened when it came to light, all my mother's resentment, anger, hurt just exploded. And it exploded at me because I reminded her of my biological father. And that's when all my destructive actions started, my addiction started. I got very heavy into alcohol. I got very heavy into hurting my body. I got, it was just one thing after another not to feel or not to feel. And I didn't care if, I didn't survive or not. And I was thinking about it with you, wondering how did other addictions play a role for you? Because I came into AA in October, if I make it to October, it'll be 30 years from alcohol. And that was so hard then, but I find the gambling to be so much worse. And I tried to use AA to deal with it, which does not work at all. It makes it worse. And I was just wondering if you had experience with anything like that. And I just want to say I'm so grateful to hear you today. I would love to talk to you more, but I wish you well, and I love hearing about your kids. Thank you.
Alex, thank you so much. And thanks for sharing just now. I mean, this is why I love GA. I think it's just incredible how I can feel a connection with other people and how I don't feel alone and I don't feel scared because everyone knows what I've went through or what I'm going through and can relate in some way. It's just I love this journey for so many different reasons. I think I turned to gambling. I think I didn't turn to alcohol because I seen what it did to my mother, and for me, it was never like I never drank. Like I think maybe in my teens, I tried alcohol, could take it or leave it. Just with my friends, college, whatever. Never really bothered me, and to this day, never ever bothered me. And my grandfather was an alcoholic. My uncle was a compulsive gambler, and I also have a brother who's a compulsive gambler. My other brother, that's 11, 13 months younger than me. And it's strange, because they did advise me in rehab. They were like, Michelle, sometimes you can actually pick up another addiction now because you're canceling out gambling, for instance. But I just went like, I never had any experience with drugs, Alex. I don't know, maybe it was the friends I kept. I was never even offered ever in my life. I wouldn't couldn't even tell you what a narcotic looked like. I did learn when I went to rehab and I went to, CA and AA and NA and, but I never had that urge like I had with gambling. It was for me, it was always just gambling because I think, and I remember saying to my counselor in rehab, I actually think that is the worst addiction that anyone could ever have. And he said, Michelle, all addictions are the same, but for me, you know, my partner, every time I relapse, nobody could tell because it's so hidden for me, Alex. Gambling was so hidden. I was so good at hiding, at manipulating. Like I was in rehab crying, saying I wish I was an alcoholic because people could have seen the signs sooner before I did any damage, major damage. But for like my counselor said, Michelle, all addictions are the same. They have the same consequences. They have the same. That's what he taught me in rehab. But I was like, I wish I was a drug addict. I wish I was an alcoholic. Because for me, the pain was so bad of gambling. I thought these other addictions cannot be any worse. But really, the truth and reality is, Alex, what they taught me were, you know, all addictions are the same and we are all the same. Like, and what we experience is the same, whether I'm an alcoholic or whether I'm a drug addict or whether I'm a compulsive gambler, we'll feel the same pain, and we'll have the same consequences. You know, it's sometimes it could take longer with, you know, gambling or, you know, longer with alcohols. I'm not sure. God, I hope I'm answering this properly now. I'm just like, yeah, I've never. For me, it was always gambling, and it was always so difficult for me to just stop. I could not stop. Like one bet was too many, Alex. You know, 1,000 would never have been enough, and I can see that today. And I know that if I ever had, like, I don't associate with, you know, any type of, like, I wouldn't even, as my sponsor says, toss who's going to pay for a coffee. Like, that's the way he taught me now, you know, my sponsor in Ireland. And you know, I just do not associate with watching anything, or, you know, it's very difficult sometimes because, as I said, the fa I have family, you know, in an industry that is very close to what, you know, broke me. But I don't think about like things like that today. I just think about, Michelle, your mindset is good. I try and have a positive outlook and a positive mindset because I had so much negative energy and negativity when I was gambling, and depression and feeling sorry for myself. And but eventually I think getting a sponsor and working through the steps, and it just changed who I am. It just gave me so much confidence and strength, and yeah, it just changed everything about me. But I think it was really just about finding that person that I used to be again, Alex.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I when you talked about switching addictions, I lost my son about 14 years ago, and I didn't drink. I stayed close to the program, and I just started dabbling in gambling. You know, it was like my reprieve away from everything, from grief. So, question 15, question 20, you know, alcohol brought me to question 20, you know, wanting to kill myself and not wanting to be here, you know, and I came to that place and how quickly we can, or I crossed the line in gambling because I didn't know how to deal with the grief and I didn't know how to, but I wasn't drinking. So, like, I could look good on the outside that I wasn't drinking, but nobody knew how in depth I was with the gambling. And I just thank you so much for sharing everything you have. Thank you.